Hello, everyone. I am Brian Zermitt, custom content editor with Becker's Healthcare. Thank you for tuning in to the Becker's Healthcare podcast series. I am pleased to be joined by two guests today as we discuss interoperability and reaching beyond technology to work towards better patient care. We are thrilled to be joined by two leaders at Allscripts who will dive into our interoperability discussion. Before we begin, I am pleased to introduce our guests. Phil Morris is the director of the team of population health subject matter experts at Allscripts, a team that focuses on connecting people with data so that they can make better decisions. He began his programming career in analytics on Wall Street and has product development and subject matter expertise in the consumer products, pharmaceutical, cybersecurity, and healthcare industries. He has several domain-specific professional certifications and has led data integration programs in both the commercial and federal markets. Currently, he works with organizations in the U.S. and across the world using advanced analytics to help them measure what matters as they work to build a smarter, connected community of health. We are also thrilled to be joined by Dr. Michael Blackman. Dr. Blackman joined Allscripts from McKesson and now provides medical leadership across the Allscripts Care in Motion suite. Passionate about looking for methods to improve care, he has worked with multiple hospitals and health systems to improve how EHRs are used to both advance patient outcomes and improve clinician workflow. Additionally, he was a leader in the early work to enable the widespread use of EPCS, electronic prescribing of controlled substances. A former assistant professor of medicine at the University of Massachusetts School of Medicine, Dr. Blackman holds an MD from Brown University and an MBA from the University of Michigan. He completed his residency in internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Miami Jackson Memorial Hospital. Phil, Dr. Blackman, thank you for talking with us today.
Brian, thank you very much. We're pleased to be here.
Thanks, Brian, very much for the opportunity.
So with that, let's jump into the first topic of our conversation. Question one here, guys. What problems do information silos create for patients and providers?
So, Phil, this is Michael. I'll start with that one. So, as we look at the information silos, or frankly, lack of being able to get to information, they create sort of gaps in knowledge or gaps in awareness for providers. So, you know, if you're seeing someone and they're in the ability to answer all of your questions and they're good historians, not as much of a big deal, but think about the patient who shows up in the emergency room after a car accident at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're not providing information. You're stuck with, you know, what you have. And the more information you can get, the better off you're going to be to take more efficient care of the patient. Phil?
Right. Thanks, Dr. Blackman. And you're right. I mean, what we've noticed is that healthcare has changed from what happens in one office or one location to what happens across many offices or many locations, and even from there to what happens outside of those offices. I mean, silos, by definition, keep that data from being shared, or even worse, as Dr. Blackman reminds me, let it become stale. And isolated stale data is not a good practice for building a connection of stakeholders, especially if all those stakeholders have been charged to support a single customer, or in this case, a patient, in a way that requires a lot of handoffs and transitions of care.
So what role does interoperability play in achieving value-based care, specifically with regards to the quadruple aim?
So as we think about the quadruple aim, I mean, two of the main facets there are obviously improving quality and controlling and maintaining costs. So similar to the silos question, the better the information we have, the better off we can provide quality of care, and equally, perhaps not repeat things. If information is available, we can more efficiently controlling the cost, reducing additional testing cost, and frankly, that also reduces risk to the patient. Even the most simple test comes with low risk, but it's not zero risk.
Dr. Blackman's right. I'll add to that by saying the concept of interoperability, from our experience, has value all across the quadruple aim. It's not just really focused on one quadrant of it. Let me give you an example. If I can help a clinician reach a faster diagnosis by giving them access to some data they didn't have before, then I've made them, as an individual, more productive. And that affects provider satisfaction. Now, that same faster-to-time diagnosis may have removed some duplicative testing or unnecessary testing, as Dr. Blackman indicated, which would affect the cost dynamic. And since the patient wasn't subjected to undue harm due to screenings or tests which may have delayed implementing a successful treatment or avoid an adverse condition, they hopefully got healthier faster. So that's speaking to the dynamics of patient satisfaction and quality. So interoperability has an overlay across all four quadrants of the quadruple aim.
I was going to say one additional piece is we talk about patient satisfaction. Patients expect, as they show up at the physician's office or at the hospital, that we know things about them, especially if they've been there before. And simply changing the dynamic, there are a lot of handoffs, and patients often question whether we talk to one another as they get asked the same question over and over. And often there are useful clinical reasons, frankly, for asking the question repeatedly. You get slightly different answers. You get fuller information the second time around from the second questioner. But using the information that's available from elsewhere, you know, getting interoperable information from a variety of sources, we can change that dynamic and change the way we ask the question. Something as simple as, I see you're taking medications A, B, and C. Did I miss anything? As opposed to saying, what medications are you taking? It gives the provider what they need and gives the patient a totally different view of the encounter.
And that's Dr. Blackman, that's a good point. What I would add to that is that using the quadruple aim as a basis for understanding interoperability is good too, because the nice thing about the quadruple aim is that it's designed, the way it's designed, is that it has a positive effect. If you have a positive effect in one area, it creates an impact across all four dimensions. And just like a negative one, and here you can use the lack of information sharing that would have prevented me getting to a faster diagnosis and developing a treatment plan, would create a negative impact across all four of those dimensions. So there are primary focuses that all of our customers work with and all of our partners work to satisfy, but you need to understand that positive impacts apply across all four dimensions, just like negative ones do.
Thank you, gentlemen. And my next question, we've touched on this a little bit here, but how important is it for providers to have access to a holistic view of the patient? Dr. Blackman, would you like to start us off this time?
Sure. So again, you want to have as full information as possible. It would be the very rare instance where you have complete information or you believe you know everything. But the better overall view one can have, the better one can take care of someone, bringing a whole variety of different considerations into effect. Because most people being seen, especially in the hospital setting, often have more than one problem and things interact with one another. And this goes beyond, frankly, basic health data to be getting the social determinants of health and other publicly available information as we move forward in time, because someone lives in a place where the access to supermarkets and food isn't as great, what can affect your discharge plan, your follow-up plan. The same will be what their transportation needs are. It doesn't do any good to say, well, follow up for care in 2 weeks if the patient has no way to get there.
I agree. It's important because it's the foundational layer of how you should approach interoperability, but I'll be clear, I don't think that's enough. Speaking as a technologist, I don't think that's enough for it to be successful today. I think to be successful with a holistic view of the patient, you have to also make the data relevant. I mean, Dr. Blackman is giving a good discussion of the clinical aspects of how that's important. I'm a technical subject matter expert, so I'm speaking to it at a different level. But as a digital health subject matter expert, I think it's my mission to get good data in front of someone like Dr. Blackman who can use it to solve a problem or maybe create an opportunity. I mean, that mission has the ideas of quality and relevance built into it. We work with clients who are breaking down these interoperability silos really in three ways, and it's really important to this discussion of relevance to highlight the difference here. There's the internal or intraoperability, where you can control the silos and the stakeholders, so you can set a policy and a direction to connect those silos. That's intraoperability. Then there's connections between partners, true interoperability, where you can control or dictate one half of that equation or that connection. And then we spend a lot of time working with our customers at the meta level, where you're connecting the data sources, but you're making the data relevant, no matter where it comes from. We call that at Allscripts process enabling interoperability. And it's really the goal that we see everyone shooting for. And it requires infrastructure. It requires what we call semantic harmonization. We've been doing it for a long time. It requires being able to take an HbA1c from one platform and an HbA1c lab result from another platform and synchronizing them together semantically so that when they're used downstream for analytics or care coordination or program development or cohort management, you're able to have the type of common definitions of these concepts to make good policy decisions.
Yeah, and Phil makes a really good point there, that the way the information is presented and the workflow around it is critically important. Simply having more data is simply more data. What we need is more information, and that really depends on the way it's presented in a way that people can appropriately consume.
Right. I mean, we've looked at a lot of different industries where you have to increase the situational awareness of the end user. They're trying to understand more so they can make a decision. And we've been looking at situations where industries have very complex decision-making and a lot of information overload coming into that system. And we've settled on the idea of a virtual assistant or a clinical heads-up display, if you would, that will highlight the information in context to what the end user is doing in whatever system they're using, and give the end user the opportunity to drill down and explore across different dimensions, problems or conditions or care coordination or gaps in care in a way that doesn't impact any of their existing training or their experience or their intuition. We see that as being a real successful way to showcase a holistic view of a patient without disrupting the end user's goals and maybe helping them get closer to those goals.
So what are the biggest challenges to achieving interoperability in healthcare? Phil, did you want to get us started on this one?
Okay, thank you. I see it as issues around trust and costs and liability. I mean, Michael and I have talked about this a lot. I don't know necessarily that the barriers are technical, with the exception of maybe a national patient identifier, and I think that's really more of a matter of a properly reviewed policy directive. The ONC's trusted exchange framework that this proposed is a good start. It offers a good set of what I call first principles, and it offers a framework for the technical implementation, as well as the data governance around what interoperability at a larger level would look like. The technical barriers to that framework are very low, but the issues around trust and allocating costs and liabilities still seem to be prevailing factors in the conversations with the prospects and customers that I speak with.
Dr. Blackman, would you like to weigh in?
Sure. So I think beyond some of those technical pieces, I always come back to the workflow. And as I alluded to earlier, you know, in addition to simply having the information, it has to be available in a way that people can consume. Sometimes people look at the exchange of, you know, aftercare summaries or CCDAs as simply, well, that's interoperability because we've exchanged the information. But in some cases, that information is presented in a way that's nothing more than electronic pieces of paper. So you need to have a way to be able to mine that information. And as Phil was talking about, you know, with the heads-up display, be able to present it in the user's workflow so they can take advantage of it. If it is simply going to be a matter of, well, it's there, but you have to dig for it, that doesn't help any more than having in the old, you know, the old days of five volumes of old chart that you had to dig through to find what you were looking for.
Yeah, Dr. Blackman's right, and I'm going to change metaphors here to describe it from a different perspective. A lot of what I see, we see as interoperability, exchanging a CCDA, for example, is just a different version of something I had when I was growing up, and I'm going to date myself here, the World Book Encyclopedia. And if you wanted to find something in the World Book set of encyclopedias, you would go to the index volume and maybe find the reference to whatever it is you were searching for, and then you would have to go to the actual volume itself and search to that, and maybe you would find what you're looking for. And a lot of what's passing for interoperability, at least as a base level definition, is just exactly the same workflow. It's not productive to someone who's trying to make clinical decisions in an overworked and a chaotic environment where there's a lot of pressure to get it right the first time.
What kinds of technologies and platforms are necessary for achieving interoperability? So you can get us started again here if you'd like.
Sure. So I'm the technologist, so I'm going to answer it from that perspective, and Dr. Blackman can add some clinical overlay to it. My list is my own. It's certainly not exclusive, but let me think about that. Data exchange standards are important. That's where we agree on how we're going to share the data. Open and secured data transmission standards, we're going to agree how we're going to protect the data. I mentioned semantic harmonization. That's really the whole process of making the data useful, I think. And then a really good, robust data governance is important. That's where you need to agree that the data is fundamental to what it is everyone's doing in healthcare. And that's where most of the leaders, I think, in healthcare are moving today. There are a large number of organizations today who don't realize the value or the advantage that having a good data governance process offers you. I mean, I work a lot in population health projects, and in population health projects, I emphasize everyone is a stakeholder. It's not just the nurse or just the provider. It's the in-house pharmacist and the retail pharmacist. It's the acute care team and the ambulatory care team and the social care team. It's the payer and the employer. All these are stakeholders in a population health strategy. And that doesn't even count for the data analysts or the quality improvement teams or the public health specialists who have to make all this theory a reality. All these stakeholders depend on data to make decisions and to be measured as they progress to or away from their goals. And being able to have that level of data governance and semantic harmonization, I think, is really important to the longer term goals of satisfying what interoperability needs to be.
Yeah, I think that Phil covered the technical questions really well there. And I would just sort of pick up on a couple of the points he made. One, absolutely the governance. That's critical to how organizations use the data and share the data and have an understanding also of what they will and won't have. He also did mention, you know, a national patient identifier or some other way to make sure that we're seeing the right information for the right patient. It's certainly worse to have mismatching, seeing information that actually belongs to a different patient rather than no information at all, and that's clearly an error we want to avoid.
Great. Thank you both. Beyond the implementation of technology, what do organizations looking to integrate care need to focus on to achieve true interoperability? Dr. Blackman, can you get us started?
Yeah, here it comes down to workflows. What information is going to be available? How is it going to be available? And how to get it to the right person? And Phil's comments before is right. Medicine is absolutely a team sport. So whether it's the pharmacist, the nurse, the case manager, the social worker, the physician, they all need the right information at the right point in their workflow. And the more that information can be shared, even internally in the same system between those groups, but picking up what was done elsewhere actually make a huge difference to helping keep patients healthy and having an understanding of what their care plan is, especially as the care for patients becomes more complicated.
This is Phil. I'm going to add what Dr. Blavin just said with two other aspects that I think complement very much what he just described. First, thinking of from a design perspective, you need to keep a focus on ease of use. If you're making it difficult for someone to use your data to reach a decision, then you've created a barrier of adoption that is of your own making. And secondly, I would think about reinforcing the focus on outcomes and feedback loops. I mean, asking the hard questions like, did the strategy create the outcome or satisfy the goals that you wanted? Or by how much did you exceed or miss the mark? I mean, the industry is getting really good at throwing a lot of data on a screen that, let's be honest, used to be on a fax and saying, well, now I've done my part, you figure it out. But that's not really a way to measure the progress toward helping somebody reach a goal or an outcome. So I think ease of use is an important consideration that needs to figure into this as well.
Thank you both. And so across the healthcare system, do you think we're seeing the cultural changes necessary to support nationwide interoperability? Phil, do you want to take this one?
This one's tough. Thanks, Brian. Yes, cultural changes, I see signs for optimism. My background is in organizational psychology, so systems thinking is a major part of how you do organizational analysis these days. And that means you need to respect, as I said earlier, the idea of a feedback loop. If those who are defining the framework for national interoperability can't answer the question, what's in it for you, to those who are being asked to make these changes, then we're going to have the status quo for quite a while. But the system as it exists right now is unsustainable in the long term. We all understand that. And interoperability is going to be a very large part of how we're going to have to move forward as an industry.
I would agree with Phil. I think we're getting there. people are understanding that the value of getting information from elsewhere, recognizing that not everything has to be done where you are. And I think additionally, as we look at, you know, we'll get into this a bit more in a minute, but as we get into the quadruple aim and, you know, across patient experience, you know, population health, cost containment reduction, and clinician experience, that alone is driving people's desire to have fuller information, to see it in a way that makes sense.
So what will healthcare look like once true national interoperability is achieved? Dr. Blackman, would you like to pick this one up?
Sure. So ideally, you start being able to see information from anywhere. However, you know, healthcare is predominantly local. I live in North Carolina, so odds of my needing care in South Carolina or Virginia are far greater than my needing care in Washington State. But as you move across the country, you sort of hit across those concentric circles and geographic lines continually. So the more we can share, the more people will be in a position, you know, clinicians and others, to have a full information for a patient when they see them. Hopefully this will help us, you know, contain the cost curve. We're currently at about 18% roughly of GDP going to healthcare costs. The only thing we know for certain is that, you know, rate of spending is not sustainable. I think the other question that'll come up as we look at national interoperability is how does that get funded? That's an issue as to why some of the early HIEs, the health information exchanges, didn't do very well over time. But something we're going to have to grapple with and say that, you know, we're going to share this cost across the entire health system, and it won't be a responsibility of any individual group.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, if I could add to that, Dr. Blackman is bringing up the good point, and the cost curve or the cost of interoperability being used as a barrier to moving forward, I think, is a bit of an obstruction. I think that if we get national interoperability, what will happen is that we'll start breaking down the implications of how these costs are driving how we deliver healthcare. I see that as the next summit beyond the one we're talking about now. We can see that peak. But once we've got some good data sharing agreements and we're starting to share risk and work with timely, relevant data, then we'll be able to start looking at the next questions. And the next questions that I see there are, what's increasing the cost in delivering healthcare or administering healthcare or paying for healthcare? There's a lot of implications to that. And let's be honest, there are parties with vested interests who want to keep that data to themselves. But as Dr. Blackman said, the system just can't sustain that perspective in the long run. That journey is going to be full of some pretty challenging ascents and some scary crevasses, but I think we need to realize that we're all going to be going there in the long run.
Additionally to that, you know, as we have, you know, more data and the points Phil made earlier about the appropriate privacy and security concerns, the ability to learn more as we understand what works for patients, beyond what's done typically in clinical trials, to know what potentially works for others and make, you know, create new innovations in the way healthcare is delivered and treatment options, especially for diseases that don't occur as frequently, being able to pool that knowledge together more easily.
And Michael, you're right. If I could add something Dr. Blackman just mentioned, we're doing a lot of work in genomics right now and precision medicine. So being able to share data isn't just in the context of, well, now I know that Phil has an allergy, or now that I know what medication Phil's on, but being able to understand, well, because of these tests, I can see that this hypertension medication for Phil will not be effective because he's genetically predisposed for it not to work. I mean, those are important ways that we'll be able to affect all four quadrants of the quadruple aim and start to get people healthier and on chronic disease programs or episodic treatment programs that will be productive in the long run.
Thank you both for your time and thought-provoking responses today. We also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Allscripts. You can tune in to more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.